takeaway.org. How would you save money with your healthcare?
Well, staying with California, and maybe it is the case that I am trying to make you sick, but think of this. If you're a species and you're 6 feet tall, you only bloom once in a decade, maybe. When you do, you smell like rotting flesh. You've got to ask yourself, what's the evolutionary advantage of a creature like that? And then when you realize that the so-called corpse flower, Amorphophallus titanium, actually needs humans to prevent its extinction, you really have to wonder if there's a design flaw here. Joining us now from Huntington Botanical Garden in San Marino, California, Jim Folsom, director of the gardens, is with us. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
You got to feel sorry for the corpse flower if it needs humans to keep it from going extinct and has all of those bizarre characteristics. But there's a lot of excitement about the blooming of the flower, right?
You know, there's always excitement surrounding this plant because it is so darn unusual.
And I've mentioned a couple of qualities. It stinks when it blooms. I mean, does it really smell that bad when it blooms?
Well, yeah, if you unless you're a fly and you think that a rotting horse is a delightful fragrance, then yes, it stinks when it blooms.
I see. Now, the rotting horse smell, would that be an evolutionary advantage because it attracts flies which somehow pollinate it or something like that?
Precisely. It is a smell that flies find alluring.
I see. And what about other corpse flowers? Do they find it alluring too? But I guess they don't mate like animals.
No, they have a different system.
Right. Now, I've heard that the shape of this flower, this plant, is unusual enough to have actually meant that women were not allowed to actually look at it in days of yore.
There are stories about that. I don't think people were ever as prudish as we like to think they were.
But I don't want to describe it. But is the key to what I'm talking about in the Greek Amorphophallus titanium, the actual name of it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What's funny about the name is, of course, there are many different species, we call them, within this genus called Amorphophallus, and the ones that that caused the genus to be named didn't have such a prominent shape. This one, however, is quite prominent. It's a 6-foot column.
Wow. So what is the scientific significance of keeping this plant alive and of observing its pollination? And many people are going to if it actually blooms.
What is really curious is some of the most fascinating plants, least fascinating to me and to other botanists on the earth, are plants about which we know very little. And so here we have a plant that is notorious or so well known, and we don't know a whole lot about its biology, and that's true about many plants on the face of the planet. And so here we have this plant that's dramatic and wonderful and exotic, and yet we don't know a lot about what keeps it from going extinct. And here we are, as humans, changing the planet on a daily basis, and we don't even quite know how to stop from destroying all of the wonderful diversity around us.
Jim, hello there. This is Femi OK talking to you. I love this plant. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with it. But how do you know at what point it's actually going to bloom?
You know, that's part of the mystery, is that this plant starts out, if you know a plant from New York area called Jack in the Pulpit, it's a near relative, and it comes up, instead of Jack in the Pulpit, it doesn't come up with a flower every year. It comes up with a single leaf, and it starts out as a small one from seedling, and then each year, each growing season, it puts out a new leaf that's bigger, to the point that the leaf towers over you. So when it makes a leaf the size of a parasol in an outdoor cafe, a single leaf.
Wow.
Then next year, next growing season, you can think, this sucker might bloom. So you start paying more attention. And then finally, I mean, the next year it might come up with yet another bigger leaf, 9 feet tall, that has a span of 6 feet. So you're standing under this big parasol of a leaf. But then finally, you go out. We went out the other day, just only 3 or 4 weeks ago, and we saw this leaf perhaps emerging from the ground, and it just looked different because it had a big phallus right in the middle of it, and we thought, okay, it's going to bloom.
Big phallus right in the middle, boom, it's going to bloom.
Well, it's going to bloom.
I'm thinking, what are these plants native of? Are they? I'm thinking, you know, Jurassic era, there's dinosaurs roaming around, these plants are everywhere.
I think that's only because it looks like it ought to be with a dinosaur. It's really a more recent plant. All of the aroids, the arums, the philodendrons. This is related to, as I said, the Jack in the Pulpit. It's also related to that big mall plant, the white one, Spathiphyllum. So it's related to a lot of plants we know, but they're not that ancient of a group. So it looks ancient because it's got this bloodthirsty look about it,
right,
and it's giant. But perhaps it's not that ancient.
Well, Jim Folsom, last question. Millions of years from now, when biologists from another planet actually are examining what happened here on Earth, what will they be more curious about, this plant, Amorphophallus titanium, or the strange human beings that were attracted to it?
I think they'll be curious about where it all went. Where did it all disappear?
Right. So sort of the Wally movie narrative, that's for sure. Well, Jim, congratulations. I hope you get a bloom there, and we'll call you when it happens, all right?
Hey, come out and visit.
All right.
Okay.
Live, broadcasting from the corpse flower. I love it. Jim Folsom is director of the Botanical Garden in San Marino, California, the Huntington Garden, where a corpse flower is set to bloom for the first time. Thanks, Jim.
Bye.
I need one of those plants.
Yes.
Amorphophallus titanium.
And
very handy.
Mark Garrison is here with the headlines.
Unbotany-related headlines, but should be interesting. I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.